It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Great to have you. Great way to start the show. And I want to start us off with the quote of the day. A friend is someone who gives you total freedom to be yourself. And that is by Jim Morrison. And anyway, again, I apologize for the dead air. Let's get this party started. I'm being joined today by John Risby. John Risby is known as the patent professor. He's a board certified specialist in patent law, an adjunct professor at Nova Southern Law School, teaching patenting for almost 20 years. Professor Risby's TED Talks have been listed as among the top 10 TED Talks for Inventors by Inventors Digest. Professor Risby is also the best-selling author of not one, but two books on inventing, Escape the Gray and Think and Grow Rich for Inventors. Professor John Risby, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Yes, thank you. My pleasure.
All right, so let's give me your background, or maybe share with your background story. You know, as far as have you always been involved in patent law? Were you a inventor in the past? Give us kind of a Reader's Digest how you got into this passion and this love for patent law.
Okay, well, I'm an engineer, and when I was I was first introduced to patenting, I had a professor at my engineering school that was working on a system of crushing glass to put into asphalt roadways, and he was getting that patented, and that's what first piqued my interest. I didn't pursue it at the time. I went ahead. I worked as an engineer for several years, but eventually I did go back to law school and focused exclusively on patents, and have been doing that now for the last 20 years.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this, because I think that a lot of people think that, hey, I'm not going to patent my product until – I start making money with it, or I'm a small company, so I don't have to worry about a patent. Is that completely false thinking? Give me your take on that.
Yeah, well, it's always been false, but even more so after some major changes in the patent law that took place in 2013, the United States moved to what's called a first-to-file system. So prior to that, if you invented first, but you took longer to file a patent, as long as you could show evidence of your invention date, you could still win in court and own rights to the idea. In 2013, this is the biggest change in patent law in over in the last century. The United States changed to meet the law of the rest of the world is that whoever files the patent application owns rights, and if you invent it first but you don't file, you don't have any rights to it. You have no ownership. So working on a prototype and perfecting the idea, you're doing that at a risk. So, and you mentioned, some people want to make sure their product is perfect before they file. That's a huge risk. If somebody else could beat you to the patent office with something that's just good enough and get that filed, and they would have superior rights to you.
Yeah, and it's amazing. What do you call it? That slight change in the law is actually pretty big, and will make a big difference to a lot of people. So no longer does it matter who invented first; it's who filed first.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, that tends to hurt the most conscientious of inventors. I mean, you hear about the person that works night and day and is not happy until they reach perfection with their idea. And there's a lot of value to that. But from a business standpoint, you want to get the patent filing in as soon as you can describe the idea, as soon as you reduce it to practice and that doesn't mean you don't continue to improve or perfect it, but you do all of that once you're protected. So you file the initial patent application as soon as possible, and then you can always tweak and make changes later on.
Yeah, that is just, yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot, again, like you said, it's great to, that you want to create this wonderful product, but sometimes, you know, what did you say? Just make it good enough, get it out there, and then you can revise it. I think that's a great strategy there. Let me ask you this. Again, you've been a patent attorney now for 20 plus or going on 20 years. Have you found certain things in common that hold a lot of entrepreneurs back from finding success?
Well, yes. I mean, one of them we talked about, and that's perfection. And, you know, in some instances, it's a good thing in terms of going forward and commercializing an idea. It actually holds them back. Another thing that holds inventors back is really self-doubt, because they start asking themselves if they're the right person to bring the idea forward. They might be an outsider to an industry, and they might think, well, who am I to suggest a change? I've never worked in, you know, whatever industry it was. And it's, you know, it's, you've got to keep in mind that, you know, some of the greatest inventions of all time were made by people that were outsiders. They weren't in the industry. They didn't fit the perfect checklist or have the ideal credentials. You know, one classic example is the invention of the airplane. I mean, the Wright brothers were two bicycle mechanics, you know, neither one of whom had even gone to college, only one of which finished high school. They were in Dayton, Ohio, and, you know, what if they looked at and said, you know what, we're probably not the best equipped to create the first, flight and gave up. So a lot of ideas, I mean, if you have them, you might be an outsider to the industry, and that just might be why you're able to see things that an entire industry is missing.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you look at it, if I came to you and said, hey, I'm you know, I have essentially no education, I certainly don't have any engineering background or mechanical background, anything that might help me when it comes to avionics, but I want to, you know, I own a bike shop, I repair bikes, but I'm going to build the first flying plane. I think most people would have said, I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, and history has shown us of, you know, again and again, examples of people that have kind of proved the naysayers wrong. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at, you know, Oprah Winfrey was told that she's too ugly for television, and she started her career in radio and was advised to stick to the radio instead of going on a visual medium like television. Walt Disney, in fact, was fired for not having enough imagination.
I love that one.
By a newspaper editor. So, you know, these are examples of, there's dozens. I've seen examples in my own practice. I had a client come to me a few years ago. He was a medical resident that had actually dropped out of medical school to pursue an idea. And he faced this. He had doctors telling him that you're making a mistake. He found that in the operating room, the surgical lenses became fogged. And what doctors would do is dip the lens in water to clean it off and then continue the surgery. Now, this to him was mind-boggling. It would introduce, you know, possible infections. It would take time. So he created a simple lens defogger that solved this. And, you know, but instead, you know, when he tried to market it, the fact that he was not a doctor and he tried to get an investment, that's, you know, he was labeled a medical school dropout and was not taken seriously. He ended up, we filed the patent for him. And a couple years after that, he sold the rights to the idea for $100 million. And today,
wow,
that same device has been used in over 1 million surgeries, and it saves lives every day, simply because he didn't take the naysayers to heart, and he didn't, assume that they're correct and that they know better because of them judging him of not having, this perfect checklist type of background to be an inventor.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. Yeah, that's a great example because, yeah, some people are going to look at what you don't have and what do you call it? Maybe beat you up might not be the right phrase, but, they're going to discount you because of what you don't have. And I love all those examples you gave. And I think, self-doubt probably is the biggest killer of most ideas in most businesses.
No, absolutely. And there's a misconception. A lot of times when I'm asked to speak about patent law, and I can cover all kinds of technical subject matter about patents and the duration and how long they last and what the requirements are, but I always make it clear to the audience that although I applaud increasing your knowledge and learning more, that's not lack of knowledge is not what's holding most inventors back, and it's the opposite of what you would think. It's really taking the first step, having the courage to step outside their comfort zone and take the first step without having all of the facts. I mean, sometimes the key to being an inventor, the expression that you, it's like flying a plane and building the wings on your way down. that's really how invention in the real world ends up being. You don't have all of the answers, and you kind of have to go with what you have. If you make a mistake, you pivot, you try something else. It's a lot of trial and error, which is hard because that's not what society teaches us is the right path. I mean, that's not what you learn in school. You don't just do a lot of trial and error. You're supposed to have answers well thought out, and many times the answers have decimal places on them, and especially you're like me. If you're an engineer, our training is that, we get answers with decimal places. You don't have these gray areas where, yes, it may be this way or it may be that way. But that's not going to be helpful to you as you try to commercialize a new idea.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about this. Again, you've been doing this for 20 years and you'd mentioned one of the big changes at the top of the show. I wanted to ask you, what other changes during your last 20 years practicing as a patent attorney have you seen? How do you see the current environment, for example, for bringing a new idea to market different than things were in the past? Talk about this.
Yeah, well, in the past, inventors were in a way helpless to getting their idea to market. You basically had to approach potential manufacturers with a license, and you were at their mercy. If somebody, if Hasbro loves your game and they decide that it's worth, commercializing, then you had a shot. If they didn't, then there's nothing you could do. Everything has changed. I mean, today it's a completely different world. With you can create an eBay store. You can pitch your product there. You can start a campaign on Kickstarter or other crowdfunding sites. You can bring your product to Amazon. You just have the ability to even bypass the manufacturer and become the manufacturer yourself. You can have the product made anywhere without having to invest in your own in-house staff. You can subcontract much of what you do. You can have virtual assistants throughout the world helping you. You can have the marketing done. This is what I call, we're living in the golden age for inventors. I don't think it's ever been a better time to be an inventor than it is now. Back when I started as a patent attorney, nobody even knew what a patent was, and I had to explain even to my family and friends what it was that I did. Today you have, with shows like Shark Tank, patenting has become a common household term. You know, back then a shark tank, it literally was, you would think of an aquarium with fish in it. It's, you know,
right.
Completely the concept of that there's investors out there looking for new ideas. It's never been as easy as it is today to license a new idea to a big manufacturer or to even get the idea out to market yourself and bypass the manufacturer completely.
Yeah, you mentioned
by offering it directly to the public.
Yeah, you mentioned you know, things like Kickstarter or crowdfunding, and I think that's probably, I think, for me, one of the biggest changes, because you can validate a product with virtually no cost, and if it's a really good product or idea, people will actually fund it for you. So
yeah, exactly.
It's incredible. It's just absolutely incredible the way things have changed. And it's just amazing now more than ever. You and I, all we have to do is really be able to explain an idea, you know, be able to put it on video, be able to, you know, get people excited about this widget that I'm going to build if I get the money. And we don't need investors. We don't need to be, we don't even, you know, we don't have to be, what do you call it, known for any specific thing. We can actually just put a crowdfunding campaign together and begin to raise money.
And not only that, it sounds absurd to even say, but you don't even need a product. I mean, you don't even have to have the thing developed. You get it patented, you get the idea protected, and you can take pre-orders and proceed that way. If nothing else, you have the ability to gauge demand, to find out, you know, hey, does anybody even want this? Or am I sometimes you have niche products that it might be something that you're the only person that, you know, or at least that's the fear that, hey, this is, I'm the only person that needs this, and maybe it's not a widespread concern. So you can crowdfund it and see if others share that need. I mean, a lot of simple, small, everyday ideas are things that the inventor initially thought was something that they alone faced until they found that, hey, there's a market for this. And if I'm finding a need for this product, there's millions of others that would like to have it as well.
Yeah, that is so, to me, incredible. And I want to back up because you said something that I want to clarify, and that is I don't even have to have the physical product. So if I want to patent something, all I have to do is essentially have an idea, go to a patent attorney, and they can file and protect that idea?
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to have a working model. You do. It has to be. You have to what's called reduce it to practice. You do have to have some sketches and an understanding of how it's going to be put together. So it can't be, your idea, your concept can't be a time machine, and the actual workings is this black box that you don't understand, and that you know, if it defies science, the patent office is not going to issue the patent, because they're not asking that you do it yourself, but they're asking that you provide kind of a recipe for how the product could be made and used. And if you can't explain that, then you don't, essentially, you don't have the invention. You can't just say, you know what, my idea is a car that runs on water. That's not enough. You've got to go and explain how an engine is going to operate just on water, or how that time machine is going to travel time. So you have to have a little bit more than an idea, but a lot less than a working prototype. And that's a misconception that's out there. So you see inventors spending sometimes, tens of thousands of dollars in creating this working prototype, which is completely unnecessary. If they can describe it, you know, ink and paper are cheaper than pretty much any other materials you're going to use for a prototype, so Put the idea on ink and paper, describe how you think it's going to be made. And remember that once you get the patent, the patent protects your concept. You're not tied specifically to the exact way that you believe your idea should be made, because there's manufacturers out there that have way more experience than you. They have more funding available. They have engineers. They have labs. They have industrial equipment. Let them worry about getting the prototype made. Your job is to make sure the idea is locked in so that it doesn't get stolen.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I like that. I like what you said there. As long as it cannot defy science, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you have an invention that on paper, it looks like you're not taking gravity into account, like your invention is showing water flowing uphill, that's not going to fly. I mean, but other than that, if it makes sense, then, and you have it described in text with the drawings, that's all that's required. There's no requirement that you have a working model produced. And this, maybe this misconception goes back, at the early days when the patent office first opened, they did require a working model to be submitted with your patent. But, that's hundreds of years ago. I mean, that's not, today there's over 10 million patents. Can you imagine if the patent office had to have storage for 10 million physical devices somewhere? It's not practical.
Right. All right, so let me ask you this. Is everything, every idea, let's say, innovation, can it all be patentable? Is there such thing as an invention sweet spot that is just right, or can we patent everything? Is there such thing as a too small or too big? Talk about this.
Yeah, well, the short answer is there's not. A lot of times I'll meet with an inventor who's had the idea sometimes for years, and they just kept it to themselves because they were embarrassed to see a patent attorney. They have this feeling that if they go in and see a patent attorney, they've got to have like the flux capacitor, have something that the car that runs on water, or you've got to have a cure for cancer to have a new invention. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, look at the Post-it note is a simple invention. It's a piece of paper with temporary type glue on it that doesn't impact the ink or the paper. The Post-it note has made over $1 billion in revenue, and it's a simple concept. There's others. Paul Sorensen was an inventor who found his fingers getting too hot when he held a cup of coffee in one of those paper cups. Now, he could have done what I had mentioned as one of the problems before, is he could have looked at it and said, you know what, I'm the only person who gets upset at their fingers getting, burned by a paper cup. Everybody else is okay with using either two cups and double cupping it, or having those kind of that type of cup that came out years ago. You'll still see it at rest areas sometimes, where they have those little paper ears that you fold out and you can put your fingers through. And, what if Paul Sorensen said, I'm the only person that's not happy with either of those solutions. He didn't like the double cup because it wasted a ton of paper. And the problem with the ears were that you were looking at a computer screen. Every time you went to grab your cup of coffee, you had to take your eyes off the screen and make sure your fingers were going right through the loops at the right place, take a sip, and do this over and over again. And he thought of a simple cardboard sleeve that slipped over the cup. It's remarkable. His idea has made $10 million a year. He patented it, $10 million a year, and has done so for the past 20 years. And, what could be simpler than that? So if you have, listeners out there that have a new idea and they're thinking, gosh, this is too simple, it's too easy, it's not enough of a change, think about Paul Sorensen and his idea for the Java jacket. What could be simpler than that?
The Java jacket. I love that. Yeah. So, and this is what's interesting too, because he didn't invent the cardboard or the coffee cup, or he just found this already pre-existing material and was able to use it in a different way, and that idea is patentable.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, and there's no, you know, sometimes there's this feeling that, you know, if I have a patent, every single component of my patent has to be new, and nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, sometimes it's every single piece that you have in your invention is out there on the market already separately. And you're just the first to have taken the different components and combined them together. And it's that combination that makes the idea unique. So, you know, there's a lot of inventions that's, you know, that's the novelty. The combination is what makes it unusual. You think about, and sometimes the combination ends up being such a wonderful combination that nobody can imagine having the parts, the separate components by themselves anymore. And one, right, one clear example is, you know, cell phones having the ability to take pictures. I mean, it's hard to imagine now, but there's a time when you would have digital cameras, which was its own product, and cell phones for making calls. And then, you know, when they're combined, yes, it's great. You can take pictures with my phone, but try today to offer a phone. I mean, it's hard. It's a shrinking market. A phone that doesn't take pictures almost seems like something's wrong with it. And, you know, like that's a defective product almost. But it's hard to think back to that there was a time when people were like, why would I want, you know, gosh, a phone's there to make phone calls. Why would I want to take a picture with my phone? I have a camera for that. But that's how much the world has changed.
Well, and what's so funny is I remember, John, I remember saying to one of my friends, why do I care to text anybody? I bought the phone so I can just call you. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, and look at texting nowadays. It's, you know, it. My kids, when they bought their phone, calling was like the last thing on their list. It was, you know,
right.
what apps can I download? What kind of memory does it have? What's the texting feature? And you look at companies. So texting is free on your phone, but there's companies like Snapchat and a slew of other ones that have made texting bigger, better, faster, and these apps have taken off. And it's, so, you know, back to the whole, comment about all the stuff is already around. People are just making it better or using it differently, and therefore it's protectable or whatever.
Right.
It's an amazing thing.
Go
ahead.
No, sorry. I mean, you had me thinking about when you mentioned the younger people and your kids and their vision of texting. Imagine, I bet you if you took a survey, if their phone had to lose one feature, they either could not text or they could not take pictures or they could not go online or the phone would lose the ability to make a phone call. I mean, guess which one they would pick? It's unbelievable. I mean, it's a phone after all. It's made to make a phone call, but that feature is the one they'd say, you know what, keep everything else. I don't need to make a phone call. I just want to be able to text and take pictures and go online. And then I'd be happy with that because some of them can't remember the last time they picked up their cell phone and actually called somebody with it.
Yeah, no, it's funny. And nowadays I get this on a regular basis. I will call somebody and they either have no voicemail set up or they'll say something like, I don't receive voice messages. Send me a text. And then it's followed by this voicemail is full. And so it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing how things have changed and continue to change. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by. And if somebody has questions, if they wanted to reach out to you, what's the website that they can find out more about you?
Oh, yeah. So I'm, as you started out today, I'm known as the Patent Professor. And I'm an adjunct professor at Nova Law School. So my website is thepatentprofessor.com.
I love it. Thepatentprofessor.com. Professor John Rizvi, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Perfect. Thank you. My pleasure.
Good stuff there from the patent professor, and you can find out more about him at thepatentprofessor.com. It's amazing all the different things that have changed, but at the same time, how they change for the better, right? The biggest takeaway from today, if you have something that you've invented, but you haven't protected it, you haven't filed a patent, you might be risking your protection. So get that done first. Nowadays, it's first to file who wins, not first to invent. As always, my friends, let's share this show with everybody you know. Let's let people know how they can protect their patents, how they can go to patent first, how they can raise money for their ideas. And as always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.